Welcome to CounselorAudioSource.net. Counselor Audio Source is a weekly podcast dedicated to the professional enhancement of practicing counselors, supervisors, and counselor educators. Look for us on the web at CounselorAudioSource.net. Today on Counselor Audio Source, contributing editor Ms. Jennifer Gilmore interviews Mr. Dick Moons, who is the founding member of the Columbia, South Carolina area chapter of the Covenant of Unitarian Universalist Pagans. Mr. Moons speaks about considerations when working with clients who have pagan beliefs.
Jennifer Gilmore, licensed marriage and family therapist, and this interview was motivated by a desire to generate an experiential source for cross-cultural counseling with pagans. Religious or spiritual orientation is an important aspect of one's culture. This is sometimes recognized when counselors are working with clients of minority ethnicity, but often ignored if the client looks to be of the dominant culture. So I have here with me Dick Moons, human being and member of the pagan community, to discuss some of the stereotypes about pagans, explore some of their culture, and brainstorm some hints for monotheistic counselors who may be working with pagan clients. So, Dick.
Hi, Jennifer.
Hi. I was wondering if we could begin with maybe a general definition of what it means to be pagan.
From a scholarship standpoint, there's a lot of different versions of that. I'll tell you that when folks talk about the old ways, as you hear people talk about pagan or Wicca, if you read and study the scholarship of it, you come to understand that a lot of what neo-paganism is today is really not old ways. So in terms of book definitions, someone who is, it's an earth-centered spirituality that recognizes the connectedness between all life, that honors the goddess mother as in the earth, that revolves around the wheel of the year or the cycles of the seasons, holds the earth reverent, holds all life reverent, etc., etc. So an earth-centered, you use the term monotheistic, it's a non- You know, to use a Unitarian term, it's a non-creedal.
Okay.
You know, there's not a deity per se. All life is sacred. God and goddess are in everyone, male and the female.
Okay. And then I think you touched on this. There's like a wide diversity within the pagan faith. So maybe like a giant pagan umbrella with a variety of different paths that come underneath. And one of those I think you mentioned is Wicca. Could you name just a couple others?
Well, there's the Gardnerians and there's Druids. So, and there are a lot of different ones, and they all have it's probably, I guess, analogous to the different Christian traditions.
Right.
How do you interpret it? That sort of thing. But when you read about those, again, most of those are individuals, that had their idea about this stuff and kind of started their own church, started their own faith-based form of paganism. So
through their own discovery, they sort of began a new path that other people found helpful.
And unfortunately, it's like anything else. There is, you know, there in some cases within the pagan community, there's the twain shall not meet. Very distinct ideas. There's for a long time, especially in Wicca, is really not a form of paganism. It's just that there's a lot of overlap between Wiccan beliefs, which Wiccan is witchcraft, and the, excuse me, if you hear noises, I'm adjusting my headset, and pagan are really two different things, but when you start understanding what they both mean, there's a whole lot of overlap in what they do. But there's a real strong, and only in the past, I don't know how many years, I can't qualify this, but in recent past has this started to change, but there for many, many years was a real strong slant towards feminism or the feminist aspect of it, where there were many circles where the male energy or the men were just excluded.
So you're talking about Wicca, where that really was strong on the feminine.
Right. So Wicca, and, you know, I'm not a scholar, so whoever's listening to this, understand, don't quote me on this, because this is not, you know, I'm not an expert per se in that, but that they are two separate things. But they overlap a lot, and you'll see a lot of people who are consider themselves pagan and or Wiccan that will say they're both, or that people in those two communities, you know, hang out.
Okay, and so I think the diversity you're talking about within those faith traditions where some of them don't get along with others or don't agree, that's sometimes true within some various Christian traditions,
right,
where they just disagree on some points very strongly.
Yeah, especially when it comes down to ritual or the way you practice ritual or what's appropriate or what's not, and the elements or the aspects that they bring into mm-hmm. their spirituality, that's where you run into those things. Well, that's not the way we do it, sort of thing.
Our way.
Yeah,
yes.
Right.
Okay. So I think another place you touched on this as well is I wanted to talk about some of the stereotypes or misbeliefs that mainstream culture might have about pagans
right.
or Wiccans.
Right.
And the first things that come to mind for me are the idea that pagans or Wiccans are the same thing as devil worshippers, there's something sinister happening. Whenever the term occult is used, people again think devil worship, or maybe that occult is the
black
same
magic.
Thing.
Right.
Or a cult, you're converting people in mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. black vans and dragging them off.
Well, and again, this is everything is from my personal experience, but we've all, at least you and I don't know who listening to this tape, we've grown up in this Western culture, right? You know, so
right.
in North America, and most of us grew up in some sort of traditional, one of the big three religions,
mm-hmm.
you know, here of some type, Christian-based, you mm-hmm. know, or even Judaism for that matter. So the whole thing about the pagans, witches, just those two terms alone, heathens, which kind of gets off in a different area, but just pagan and witches, the stereotypes right there, anybody listening to this knows what they are. You know, certainly from a, not so maybe nuts and pagans, but witches certainly. What's the first image that comes to mind?
Oh, you yeah, know? Flying on a broomstick.
Yeah, you know,
warts
the Wicked Witch of the West. You know, who was the cartoon one? The little purple witch, I can't remember her name. But yeah, you know with the crooked nose and the cackle and, or Hansel and Gretel.
Right.
You know, this sort of thing. So the older, you know, with the misshapen features and flying on a broom and casting spells, and it typically was cast in a dark light, in a
mm-hmm.
negative light.
Right.
In other words, this is a, you know, in terms of light and darkness, this is darkness. This is a black thing. You never
right.
saw them wearing pastels. They're always in black, that sort of thing. Pagans, the term pagan actually means, in the old days, it was a... It means country dweller or hick, and that came, from what I understand, that term was used in a derogatory manner back in the early days of Christianity to describe those people that lived out there that had not come under the beliefs or into the arms of the church. They
mm-hmm.
still practiced their old naive country, you know, ways. They were ignorant.
Right.
Those ignorant pagans. So that's, and I learned that through some of my readings when I first got involved with this and became aware of these paths. So that term in terms of the pagan stereotype is from that. So, and somewhere along the way it was associated with being, you know, not being a Christian.
Right.
I think the way we think of it. Witches, Wicca, that term, actually the term Wicca, it revolves around the concept of a healer or healing.
Hmm.
And the witch, that visual of a witch, is a holdover from the crone, which when you talk in Wicca about mother, maiden, crone, the three aspects.
Okay.
And the crone being the healer, the wise woman. And in the old days, the witches, from what I understand, contrary to the way the church portrayed them when the persecution started and the witch burnings and some of those things, it was not in the church's best interest to have the people in those communities seeking these healers out.
Okay.
It was counter. It took the control away from them. It took the power away from their God,
mm-hmm.
and it gave it to a human being who for years and years and years had been the person that they would bring their children to or their sick ones to or go to for advice and relationships and all
mm-hmm.
those kind of things. That got twisted around to serve the purposes, you know, of the politicians or the church to being something other than that. They were, you know, they were
right.
heretics. They were non-believers.
Right.
They were working spells. They were working, I don't know if the term black magic came from that. So that stereotype of the witch is where that came from. But witches, Wiccans, will tell you very quickly that it is all about healing and positive energy. And the witch's creed is what you do comes back to you in three. Right. So if I cast a negative energy, if I harm you in some way, if I send out bad thoughts, somehow that comes back to me threefold. So the whole concept of casting evil spells and the things that they do, right. It's when you start to really read and understand a little bit of the historical background about this stuff, you go, oh, okay. So I'm not sure if that's in terms of the stereotypes.
It's much more positive based, much more healing based, more positive energy.
Right. I mean, celebrating life, celebrating the connectedness of life, recognizing that everybody is of value, you know, and that the earth is here for us. It's our sacred trust. This earth, you know, the elements, earth, air, fire, and water. Mm-hmm. And everything connects, and what you do to this affects that. And certainly in terms of relationships in the human community, that it is. It's about healing. It's about sharing positive energies, those kind of things.
Well, and with that, one of the images of the pagan faith, one of the symbols of the pagan faith is the pinnacle. Mm-hmm. Or is that pagan as well as Wicca?
Pentacle, pentagram, yeah.
And so that also has some negative ideas in our community.
Let me on the stereotypes a little more, especially, I don't know, I would say this, it's been going on forever, but I'm 51. So in my lifetime, probably from the early days of rock and roll, James Dean and, you know, Chuck Berry, and when that rock and roll sort of thing started coming on, that kind of countercultural thing.
Right.
Well, somewhere along the line, and I don't know if it started with the Alice Coopers and the Ozzy Osbournes of the world,
right?
We all know who, I would think the listeners might know who these people are. There was a certain mass appeal, especially to young, impressionable people like myself, about that kind of, you know, exploiting those images. You know, now I think you would think of it as goth.
Right.
You see a lot of that out there. So what you see, what the public sees, is just what we did when we were kids. A lot of the things I did, I did stuff because I know it would shock the establishment, you know, and to make a statement that I am my own person and I don't have to adhere to those ways. So that stereotype today, when you see pentacles and pentagrams, oftentimes I submit that most of the people wearing that stuff don't have a clue.
They're just tapping into the shock image it has in our culture.
It's cool.
Rather than the religious symbol
it might have. Right, it's cool looking. You know, and like anything else, we like to associate with like-minded people and people that we relate to and won't challenge us for the way we look. So you can see that especially with, I don't know if it's high school, college, but you see those communities out there where they all hang together.
Right.
And they're easily recognizable. They wear black. The women wear a lot of black mascara. They have lots of piercings, you know, the chokers and the different things. So, but I have found myself in a couple situations where I was able to non-offensively engage them in a little conversation to see. Over the years, I've made it a habit to maybe ask a few questions, and pretty much without exception, none of them really knew what the stuff they had on meant. So the stereotype and what people see, those sorts of things don't do Wicca or paganism any favors because it kind of supports that myth of the dark side and black magic and devil worship and all that kind of stuff. When in reality, it's not about any of that.
So they're tapping into the negative image the culture has
for
that purpose rather than what it's really symbolic.
Right. It's kind of cool. And, you know, that whole cultural thing, the music and the stuff kind of supports that too.
So could you talk a little about what the pentacle or pentagram does symbolize?
I've never been real clear on this, but there's 5 points on it, and it's the elements, the circle, so you get the cycle, the wheel of the year, and you get the 5 elements, earth, air, fire, water, but the 5th element is spirit.
Okay.
Is the spirit. So that's what that represents. And you see that in a lot of, there's a difference between a pentacle and a pentagram.
Okay.
I can't really, look it up. Sorry, I don't know exactly what the differences are.
Okay.
But if you looked at them, you'd see there's a subtle difference, and I can't quite know what they are. I do know that that there's the feminine, as is pervasive throughout the pagan and Wiccan, is the male and female energies together.
Mm-hmm.
The male, you know, the god and the goddess.
Mm-hmm.
And they both have the triangle.
Okay.
One is male, one is female. And they're, if you look at it, it's basically an upside down and a right side up triangle. And that's male and female. In fact, what was that book that's been that's been out recently?
The
Dan King book. The Da Vinci Code.
Yes, the Da Vinci Code. They, he talked about that, and like the Star of David is maybe a symbol of those two.
And they show that in there, too. So that's part of that symbolism.
Part of
that. It's got a lot of different aspects to it. But if you're interested in a scholarship on that, look it up on the Internet.
Okay.
To all those readers. To all my listeners out there. Sorry.
No problem. So then, you know, the movies will show somebody drawing out a pentagram to call on the devil. So where's the devil in the pagan?
Yeah, there isn't. The devil doesn't exist. It's, I mean, it isn't even a point of reference if you start reading about it in the books and the different texts that have been written about paganism, or books that you can buy that talk about doing ritual and the different sabbats, which are the holidays. There's never any reference to the devil in any of that stuff. So it's just, you know, perpetrated by those old myths where someone had an agenda.
The agenda, not the reality.
The agenda, not the reality.
Okay.
And when you're talking about the reality of drawing that out, and when you're doing, and I think you recently attended one, right?
Mm-hmm.
A ritual. What you probably saw them do was a circle, and to cast the circle, you invoke the elements. So you've got the points: earth, air, fire, and water, which are the four directions.
Right.
You know, north, south, east, and west. Not in that order. And that's, there's some reference to that in doing that, in that circle, and honoring and invoking and welcoming in those elements and the energy that each one of those things represents. So that's probably what that's a holdover from, is that sort of thing. Yeah, because the thing in the movie is where the, you know, the evil warlock or the evil witch or the otherworldly devil being has got the pentacle on the floor with all the candles, and, you know, they've got the he or she victim,
right,
spread eagle on the thing,
right,
that sort of thing. So
yeah, I didn't see any victims when I went.
No. Yeah, it was not victim night at the UU church. So.
Okay, I think those, and maybe the idea of the occult and some ideas that occult is the same thing as...
See, that area for me, I mean, when I think of the occult, I guess I really don't associate it with pagan.
You don't? Okay.
No, I really don't. I guess that, to me, my stereotype of that is more on the dark side.
Okay.
Delving into dark energies or stuff like that. But I've never really, I suspect based on being in the community and meeting people, that some of the folks who, probably not so much pagan, but Wiccans, may dabble in some of that stuff.
So not so much pagan.
No. Right. And maybe that crosses over into some of that, you know, the association with Satan or the devil.
That's that might be why they think that.
Yeah, because I know when I think of a cult, I guess somewhere in there the term, the concept of the devil or Satan is in that, in terms of the occult.
Okay.
But I really don't know.
Okay.
Can
you think of any others, like the stereotypes that you've run into where people misunderstand pagan due to an image?
No, I mean, it's pretty much that. And, of course, I don't know about, you know, how pagans fare in places like, you know, Europe or the old Soviet bloc, or certainly in the Middle East, you know, where
right,
you have Islam and Muslims. But so all I have point of reference for is here, which is our predominantly
Judeo-Christian
community here. And it's not so much then the pagan thing, it's just about anybody that's not.
Right.
Is
just being a minority.
It's just being a minority. But the stereotype, I guess, to look at in another way is... There's that Christmas special that comes on every year with Rudolph, and at some point in time they end up going to the island of misfit toys,
right,
where all the toys that were rejected because they weren't quite right or they were unwanted or whatever, living there, and they're really decent people and they have big hearts, but they don't fit anywhere else. Years and years ago, I was at a pagan gathering, and I looked around and I thought, this is like the island of misfit toys. And I felt a little guilty because that has kind of a mean-spirited sound to it, but it really isn't. It just kind of describes, when you go to these things, you'll see that it's folks, even like myself, who I, in my work life, in my professional life, he says as his beeper's going off, how's that for timing? I have to present a public image. It's not hard to do. I'm a professional. I work in corporate America. But at the same time, in terms of my spirituality, I have never fit in, and I've been involved in different things, obviously, when I was a kid, and I tried some other paths. I've never fit anywhere else. Nothing ever felt right. So, you know, the stereotype is probably justified within any community when you look at the folks that are involved in the pagan and or
right,
Wiccan community. They visually stand out,
okay,
from most of the rest of the people. So there's some fair stereotypes there from that standpoint. And you've probably witnessed a little bit of that.
Okay.
Because a lot of the folks do, they wear, not that they wear it on their sleeve, but they don't hide it. I stopped at a gas station the other day, and the clerk had a pentagram necklace on. So I didn't.
So not hiding it.
Right, not hiding. So I think there is a little bit of that out there, and it's like anything else. We fear it, we don't know. So you've got the stereotypes, and you see that. So most people in this society immediately go, that person is a heathen, a pagan. They don't know what that means, but that's, you know, they're.
But that's automatically negative.
Right. That's right. They're evil. They're, you know, that sort of thing. They're wrong. And each person who is a pagan has their own stories about as they are more comfortable discussing that and coming out of the closet, if you want to think of it as that. Every pagan out there has stories about running into those stereotypes and hostility and rejection from friends and or family.
So that, it's not just stereotypes. It's oppression from mainstream culture on the minority culture.
Most definitely. There's been some, there's even some, and you may have read about this, some of it's made national news, within the armed services and in certain communities where there have been court legal cases where folks felt like they were not being allowed. You know, why can the Catholics and the Protestants and the, but why can all these other people do what they want and pray out, and but yet you're telling us we can't?
Right.
And there was a case recently in South Carolina in Great Falls, if you remember that woman who was out in the open Wiccan and had the issues with the town council
and was actually
being, you know, harassed by the locals. Mm-hmm. And that sort of thing, and wasn't getting any help from the police. So, yeah, it's oppression from that standpoint, too.
Well, and even nationally, haven't there been some political agendas to say that pagan isn't really a religion?
Mm-hmm.
Or
and that's what I was alluding to. There's been some, you know, to refuse to recognize it, or that it is not a legitimate in terms of, you know, if you're a large enough group and you, you know, try to get be a 501(c), you're running into barriers with that stuff. So, yeah.
And then at schools, I think I've heard
sometimes
they won't let them wear the symbol.
In other words, you know, I can wear my cross, but you can't wear your pentagram.
Right.
That sort of thing. And some of that, you know, I got to err on the side maybe even of the administrators in those cases, because the problem is so many of the kids may be doing that stuff with the pentagrams. They're not the straight A students. You know, they're kind of adding fuel to they're giving more fuel to the fire, because they are probably maybe the outcasts and maybe the troublemakers and things like that. And law enforcement and school administrators, when they see that stuff, the warning signs go off automatic. You may know that from some of your counseling.
Right.
If you see that, that's probably a kid that's going to be a problem.
So somebody who's maybe more interested in trying to fit into the mainstream culture might keep the idea of their pagan faith more quiet and maybe in the closet. You were using those terms earlier.
And maybe not where some people, it's that kind of, you know, this is what I am, whether you like it or not.
Right.
They kind of wear it on their sleeve.
Or especially if you don't like it.
Right. Especially if you don't like it. Yeah. You know, I may not want to do this because it pisses off my dad, I'm going to do it.
Right.
Maybe something like that. And the, with the, what you learn through experience and age, but a lot of folks, you know, you have to recognize the culture that you're in. And if you want to make a stand, that's fine. But pick your battles, and a lot of them don't.
Right.
And so whether or not it's right, it isn't, or fair, it isn't, it's still something you have to be cognizant of. You have to know the house you live in, this country we live in, and what culture's like.
Mm-hmm.
And if you choose to be very out there with that, you need to be prepared and not take such great offense when perhaps someone notices that you look very different. Or that your beliefs are threatening to them. Because they are, because people just don't know. It's a scary thing for folks because it's so counter to what they've been raised with and their spiritual beliefs.
Right.
It's
well,
scary.
That's exactly one of the pieces I was going to bring up is the unfamiliar. And so for people, the idea the unfamiliar can breed everything from scorn and rejection and scoffing to outright fear. And one place that I can think of that probably brings that out very strongly is the idea of magic, you know, and the stereotypes of magic go, you know, sprinkled fairy dust kinds of things.
Right.
But that mainstream culture has everything from a scoffing of, you know, grow up, that's not real, that's Peter Pan, to, oh, man, there's people casting spells on my children at the school causing harm.
Right.
And that they hold both of those maybe at the same time.
And that's a very real, I mean, that's not a, I mean, you can't disavow that. You have to acknowledge it. That's a very real fear based on everything they know or that they think they know and the misconceptions and the stereotypes. But that happens out there. And there's one other aspect in addition to the fear. A lot of times it's concern for that person's soul.
As well.
That person's well-being.
Part of their own religious structure.
Yeah, certainly it would be a parent perhaps feeling that way about a child or even or a husband or a wife, mm-hmm. you know, or even a child about a parent. I've seen cases of that where the parent perhaps has leanings in this direction and, you know, and the kid's getting this stuff from their peers and from people at school and they're worried about their mommy or daddy because they're going to go to hell.
Right.
Or they're a witch or they're worshiping the devil.
So the child's afraid that their
right.
pagan parent
right.
is.
And it's, and I'm just saying you have lots of different, so there's another factor besides just the fear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and maybe some self-righteous judgmentalism that happens out there that we all run into in those cases. But it can also be motivated, and oftentimes is, it may not be, it's how you say things. It may not come out this way, but the root cause of those reactions is based on concern because they care about this person. And they sincerely believe that what they're doing is wrong or harmful or perhaps causing harm or the potential to
right.
cause harm for others.
So it sounds like that's a piece that's been helpful for you, not to get all judgmental back, is to hear that it's rooted in their own concern from
mm-hmm.
their own belief structure.
Right. And the oppression is, for people in this that choose this or that it chooses, it is something that you find out very quickly. You have to make a decision about how comfortable you are sharing it with other people. I mean, you know, one of my personal things is there's two things you don't discuss, and laws and politics, you know, laws and religion.
Right.
Politics and religion. You have to be very careful. Those are emotional, very personal things with people.
And especially if you're in the minority.
Especially if you're
tricky.
In the minority.
Well, one thing you said is if you choose it or it chooses you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm reminded that, paganism doesn't really proselytize.
Right.
And
there is, and for me, and I think for many people, there is an excerpt. There is a paragraph and just a phrase in one of the books that I read early on that I was encouraged to read if I was curious about this, and that's Drawing Down the Moon,
mm-hmm.
Margot Adler. I think you and I mentioned that in one of
right.
our conversations before we did this. And early on somewhere in one of the first couple chapters, and I think I've got it highlighted in the book, it says, you know, as someone becomes aware of this and understands more of what paganism and which Wicca is, at some point in time, this thought, and it's common, is, I never knew my religion had a name.
Mm.
It's exactly what she said. And I remember when I read that, I went back and read it again because it was like, you know, that click going, gosh, you know, that is a good way of putting the way I'm feeling or the sense that I have about what this is and how I can relate to this as opposed to anything else I've ever experienced in my life as far as spirituality or what is this all about? Why are we here?
Mm-hmm.
What is the meaning, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
But just, if nothing else, to focus in just on from spirituality, a person's religion, that one phrase, I never knew my religion had a name. And she goes on to say, you won't find people standing out on a street corner with, you know, pamphlets. What do they call them? Not pamphlets. They have a name for those things. You know, you won't see people testifying
right.
out on the streets or trying to convert. In fact, it can be quite a challenge to find people to talk to about this if you're at all curious. Most people never get that far because of the stereotypes.
Right.
But if someone begins to get curious, and oftentimes it's maybe because someone they respect or a family member has expressed some interest or has divulged that they're, you know, that they are a pagan, and maybe someone, maybe that tweaks their curiosity and they start reading about it, or maybe they hear something that totally dispels or just, you know, confronts that myth, and they go, oh, you mean it's not that? A witch isn't that? A pagan isn't that? And if they're, you know, curious, that's how a lot of people find this.
So definitely not a cult that's
no.
trying to go out, convert
no.
people, bring them in, won't let them
in
leave.
Fact, it is extremely private. It is very difficult to for anybody. I don't know if you mentioned in the introduction, but I've been involved with the CUPS, which is the Covenant of Unitarian Universalist Pagans, C-U-P-S.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody, you look up the website, anybody listening, you can find there's a national organization, and it is it is affiliated with Unitarian Universalist Church. There is actually a chapter here in South Carolina,
mm-hmm.
and there are not chapters at every UU church, but there are many of them throughout the country and even the world. And what is unique about CUPS as far as pagans, and I'm getting around to the point about, you know,
right.
of not going out seeking out new members, is, as opposed to most pagan or Wiccan groups, which are very private and very closed and very secretive even for some obvious reasons, CUPS is an open forum for anyone that is. That is somewhat of its mission statement. CUPS exists to allow people who are curious or just, you know, have questions about paganism as a place to come and gather and maybe with some people who have some experience in that. And, you know, there's other things to practice, ritual, to, you know, just a study group. Think of it as that.
So otherwise it would be so closed
right.
due to oppression, privacy, not really being out, that it's difficult for people who are wanting to become
right.
pagan.
Yeah, CUPS is one of the few examples, except for some of the big pagan festivals that anybody can go to. Mm-hmm. But even there, if you look at the application process, they're not just sending out mass mailings. You have to be reading periodicals or on mailing lists to even know about these festivals when they go on. And that's just to screen out folks that might have ill intent.
Right.
Or the man. You know, and that may sound kind of corny or cliched, but there's truth in that. So the point is, it's very difficult to get involved with a group, for one thing, if it's closed. I had an experience where someone, as I found out later, someone had invited me to be a part of a circle. Mm-hmm. And you could even use the term coven. And these people had been meeting for a while, getting together. And they basically got together to do ritual, usually around the equinoxes and the solstices, as the pagan holidays. And this person had come to a few of the CUPS functions, and we got to know each other and related and all that. And they had said, I think you'd really fit in well. You know, we have something coming up. A few days later, I got a phone call from this person, very sheepish. Geez, I'm sorry, I didn't, you know, some of the people aren't real comfortable with this. I guess I should have asked. And what I realized is that they kind of took it upon themselves to invite me. And it probably, I would think it would have been okay, but others in the group were uncomfortable with someone being brought in that they didn't know.
And even like in counseling terms, there's ideas of counseling groups that are open, which means new people can come mm-hmm. in or leave, or closed.
Right.
And there's a higher level of intimacy and security in a closed group. And it sounds
exactly.
like that's part of what they're looking for in the circles.
And that's and it's safety and security. It's those things right through. And you, I think in some ways you actually, it's one of the reasons that paganism probably isn't more understood, is just because by their very nature, they're like that. So the mainstream out there doesn't have access to those experiences.
To more positive images.
Yeah. I mean, once you raise your pagan or Wiccan flag out there, you're a target.
Yeah.
You become a target. And I'll mention this, too, the experience you would have, the ritual you attended with the CUPS group, that same, was it Imbolc?
Yes.
Back in February? If you were to go to a private Imbolc, I would submit that you would see a much more... the energy would seem much calmer, much more flowing, much more natural, less perhaps contrived.
Right.
Because these people know each other. They've been doing this for however long, maybe, you know, 20 years, who knows, 30 years, some. But even groups, you know, it's, you control who's in, like any other group. You have a control group.
Right.
You know, it's hand picked. You've known each other. CUPS, you never know who's going to show up. The environment's a lot different, you know. Some of the people are very new at this, so you
right.
get, you know, a very unpolished, unrehearsed. The intent is good,
right?
But when you come to that, one of the dangers I've seen or risks is if someone has an interest in it, they might get turned off because it comes off as kind of cheesy and, gosh, these people don't even know what they're doing and they're reading.
So you don't get to see the intimacy that
right,
might.
Right, right, and part of the. I hate that happens because we all watch too much TV and you have this image of the priest, you know, and it's very theatrical.
Right.
And they're wearing the ritual garb, ornate robes and capes, and there's the candles, and it's, you know, it's very Hollywood. It's
right.
kind of this thing we've all seen, and nobody's reading anything, you know.
Right.
You know, it's, you know, spirit of the East, spirit of, you know, and it's the great diction and very theatric, and everybody knows their parts, and you go, wow. Then you come to some. Then you get reality, which is every conceivable version of that. And with something like CUPS, you get a kind of thrown together. People have good intentions, but everybody has day jobs, and it's not a closed group. So you have a lot of people coming and going. There's not a lot of consistency, so it's going to be a whole different experience.
The nature
for
of
people.
It, sure.
Yeah. Which isn't always a good thing, because then it kind of fuels perhaps if someone comes that's just curious,
they
but
might
real
not
skeptical,
get...
they might go, "This is a bunch of."
Okay, and then finally, one of the things that I want to do is brainstorm with you maybe on some ideas of ways to be a counselor mm-hmm. to work with a pagan client and ideas that might be helpful. Now, in my work, I see a fair amount of clients who are coming in for grief, abuse, or trauma counseling. And these issues tend to involve existential counseling, is what they call it. So this involves clients' religious or spiritual beliefs. The meaning of life is very important inside of those things.
So when you're dealing with the grief, trauma, those subjects relative to that person are part of the counseling process?
Almost always need to talk about their spiritual beliefs to understand how to help them with their grief and trauma issues. Yes. And some common themes that are addressed are things like, what is the meaning of suffering? Mm-hmm. And like when I think about how a Christian counselor might work with a Christian client to address some, like, what is the meaning of suffering? Some standard Christian framework things are that this suffering could be seen as a life lesson. Suffering could be seen as an opportunity for growth. Suffering could be seen as a test of faith. And for some, it might even be seen as a punishment for something negative they've done, not following. So looking at that through a pagan framework, which I realize is a very broad framework, so finding an answer to this may be tough, but if it's too broad, just looking for it for yourself, is there a framework for the meaning of suffering within a pagan
belief system?
Right.
Structure. You know, I think that's probably one of the areas that makes this less attractive to people is as opposed to Christianity, where you are given the answers
right
to those kind of things and to explain why maybe you're suffering, like you just said, you can, you know, I've done something wrong. It's an obstacle that's been put in my place. The Lord is testing me. You don't get that with this.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get this with this. So I think if I'm thinking of it from a counselor standpoint, I don't have that point of reference. I don't think I could find as a counselor that point of reference to be able to find anything in the pagan belief system that would offer that same,
like a set of relief or something.
Right. Yeah. It's really not there because they're as opposed to like Hindu where there's karma,
right?
Those kind of things. That is there, but it is again more just it's more around. So I'm processing this when
yes.
I think about if I'm a counselor and someone is dealing with trauma or grief and trying to understand, okay, they're pagan, so how could I maybe relate something in terms of that? But I think it has to do with, it would be more along the lines of energy, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Positive. And this is Jellianism. I'm thinking out loud here. Positive, negative energy and what you're putting out in terms of response to whatever that is causing this suffering and how you're choosing to deal with it. It's much more of it's not so much of a spiritual thing. It's almost more just of saying, you know, you get what you put into something. If you put out negative, you're going to get back negative. It becomes, I think, less maybe pagan even, but pagan beliefs don't give you a lot to work with this. So you almost pull back a little bit, I think, and say, you have a choice of how you deal with this. There isn't some God that you can pray to. You know, you have to look to your own resources and the resources of your community to try to help you through this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all up to how you, it's going to be dependent on how you choose to deal with this, whatever this trauma, this grief, this whatever the cause of the suffering is.
So some measure of personal responsibility. But then there's also a piece in there that I thought sounded a lot like the way the Dalai Lama defined karma, which is that it's the energy you put out creates more of that kind of energy.
Well, and I think that was the one thing that popped into my head if I had to, in terms of thinking about it, it's more exactly that, along those lines of putting you, if you give into that, to the negative, to the dark, you know, and you allow yourself to get sucked into that, the more you do that, the harder it's going to be to pull out of that. But if you grit your teeth and you try to get a perspective on things and step back and see the big picture and all those kind of things, then mm-hmm. you will, and again, only through your own resources or perhaps those of your family, friends, your community.
So connecting to the social support.
Connecting to the social aspect of it and recognizing that you are God. Thou art God, thou art goddess. That's one of the things you'll hear in pagan ritual.
Okay.
I acknowledge you. I'll say, you know, you'll say thou art God, and I'll respond by saying thou art goddess. You know, it's that it's within yourself.
So are you talking there about the idea of a co-creative process, that as God and Goddess we can be a part of creating what is happening in our lives?
Yes, co-creation, conscious evolution.
Conscious evolution.
Conscious evolution is the way I think of that.
So it? That piece could be brought in to begin to change what's happening through a conscious.
Right, again, as opposed to looking to some outside deity.
Turning it, instead of turning that over to happen.
Right.
That I can control
being,
my piece.
It's instead of being, I think of it as being self-help versus the notion of I'm helpless, I have no control, everything that happens is at the will of,
right,
you know, some guy in the sky with a beard, or right, some blue guy, you know, if you're hitting, it doesn't matter through, you know, it's not looking for a help from an outside God type.
Influence. Okay, and looking more within.
Right, as you
so
said,
something,
co-creation, conscious evolution, you know, recognizing you have the faculties and the means within you to deal with anything that's handed to you.
Well, that sounds to me like it's a shift from why, that the why is almost, doesn't matter, that it's now it's the what, now what?
Yeah, it's a moot point.
What can I do about this now?
It is what it is. And there is no meaning in it. It's not you were bad. It's not you're trying to be taught a lesson. That's the way life is.
Stuff
you know?
Happens.
People get hurt. People die. People will hurt you. People will disappoint you. You know, you will suffer physical and emotional
right.
pain through your life. And that's part of being human.
So then meaning would be part of that personal evolutionary process where mm-hmm. I create meaning for myself out of this.
Right, right. Yeah. And again, well said when you said it's not so much the why. You could stay there. If you try to figure that out, you'll never leave it. You'll never right. get off the why because there isn't an answer.
Okay.
You know?
And so if somebody's presenting, because I think you mentioned that many pagans, perhaps, come from some other faith to begin with and
right.
then move over. So perhaps a big piece of their counseling, because I've noticed, you know, like an idea that you're raised with can get really kind of stuck in your gut in a way. And if you pick a new idea later, you might have it cognitively, but then under big stress, you kind of go back to the old idea.
Mm-hmm.
And so perhaps like the pagan idea that there is no sin
mm-hmm.
versus if I was raised in a Christian church that I might be afraid that something's happening about sin. As I try to blend those two together, perhaps the counselor could bring those out for discussion and see, well, what is it that you do believe and where do you want to go with that?
Yeah, and I think that's probably going to be a challenge for someone, for the very, just like talking about suffering and trying to draw an analogy in terms of a Christian counselor
mm-hmm.
dealing with a Christian versus pagan. It's kind of, that's a difficult thing to do by the very nature of paganism. So
instead of text, it's going to be process.
It's going to be, and to your point, you're going to have to maybe go back and try to find some context to help define it in for them, I think, which is kind of what you're saying.
Yeah.
Recognizing. And maybe even talk about, say, okay, you say that you're a pagan, you know, tell me a little bit about yourself.
What does that mean?
What does that mean? And, you know, have you always been? Get them maybe to talk a little bit about that to give you some sense of what you talked about, of some of those innate, those, you know, they're in there on the hard drive. You can't
right.
ever really get rid of them completely because they were bored in for so long.
Mm-hmm.
That whether you realize it or not, some of the way you react to things may still be based on some of those old, not paradigms. Whatever
old learnings. I mean, even kind of like we do, like when we're raised, you know, we get some learnings from our parents, which later we may decide we want to do differently.
Right.
And then under stress, we find ourselves
right.
yelling at our kids the same thing
yeah,
that
that's
our
right.
parents.
Old habits are hard to break.
So. Yeah. Well, that's good. Okay. So would you say that's the same kind of thing? So I was also going to ask you about messages of comfort or hope or meaning of life. And so what I'm hearing is there isn't like one text that would get quoted or anything like that, but that there is a process of finding those meanings mm-hmm. along the individual's path, perhaps.
Yeah, I think so. And I think probably just an that it again focuses back on your connectedness with the earth and with all the life out there, and kind of pulling on that when you're, regardless of what the issue is, you know.
So then, like some issues that would need to come in as they're talking about their own processing, finding of this place, finding these messages within their belief structure, would be something where you ask about Tell me about your social connections. Tell me about your interconnectedness to the rest of life and how that's playing out with this issue. Maybe tell me about the God within you and how that's playing out with these issues. Are you tapping into that or are you shutting that down? Where are the energies? Are the energies coming from you positive or negative? And how would you like to influence this and tap into those? Are these the right kinds of questions to...
Yeah, I think they are. And I think one of the things, as you were saying those, as I was imagining some of the people I know, I think one of the things that the counselor needs to be aware of is that because of its very nature, you may find it, you have to be a little careful, I think, and perhaps the person just a moment ago when you were asking me to think about relating the Christian counselor with the Christian client and relating to suffering in terms of their belief system, and it took me a while to even try to
shift
that and try to find in here, I think a potential is for a client to get frustrated because they can't answer those kind of things. It's maybe something they've never thought about before.
You've just heard an interview of Mr. Dick Moons regarding Counseling Considerations When Working with Pagans by contributing editor Jennifer Gilmore. Look for previous podcasts, show notes, and listener feedback on the podcast website at counselorautosource.net. Listeners can leave comments or questions for our interview guests or hosts through our Skype.com internet telephone ID, Counselor Audio Source, or by calling 330-871-4015. Counseling techniques and interventions discussed in the Counselor Audio Source broadcast are meant for use by counseling professionals, and Counselor Audio Source is not held liable for any use of the techniques mentioned in the program. Our music bed today is Memorial Day from Jamie Beauchamp. His and other PodSafe music can be found in the PodSafe Music Network at podshow.com. Counselor Audio Source is licensed under the Creative Commons, a nonprofit organization offering a flexible copyright for creative work.